And with that, let's begin episode 27 of Burrows and Burbs with my co-host Roberto Cabrera. Hey, Roberto.
How are you,
and
sir?
My guest, Pete Mikulski. Hello, Pete. From Wadia and Associates, which has been a name to be reckoned with in Fairfield County for what's got to be 30 years. And now, help me out here, in Palm Beach and Westchester and Rhode Island and the Hamptons and where else?
Well, not the Hamptons. So we have offices in, that's okay. We have offices in New Canaan. We have offices in Palm Beach. We had an office in Greenwich, which over on Mason Street, which we may let go. And we have operations in New York City. So, and we're a large architectural firm with vertically integrated interior design, landscape design, and construction.
So I think of you as a design, slash build, but you describe yourself as an architectural firm primarily. So you are an architectural firm, but a more capable architectural firm.
Yes. So the firm started about 40 years ago. Dinyar came over here by boat, believe it or not, and landed in New York and went to Columbia University. And ended up building, designing homes in New Canaan and doing some building, and then went entirely to design shortly after that. We're largely known for the architectural services side, but for clients that really want to streamline the process and don't want to deal with, you know, multiple subs and things like that, we have a whole raft of options for them to choose from if they want to bring that on board.
And so how many people are in the firm now? This is not just Dinyar anymore. He's got quite the supporting cast.
No, there's 13 architects and a host of support people, including myself, that work trying to move this business forward.
And how's the market in 2021? You got all 13 are busy, and you could hire, if you could hire 13 more good ones, you would, right?
We've just hired two new architects. They're starting one in Palm Beach, one here. We are pretty much at capacity in terms of business. Business is quite good. And I would say that in spite of COVID, you know, architecture is sort of a funny thing. You know, everyone wanted to say flee the city as one idea that's been out there in the news a lot. And that doesn't help us, because by the time we got done with drawing and breaking ground and doing everything else, it could be 3 years out for the project. So that hasn't necessarily helped, but it has helped in terms of people looking at renovations and other things. And it probably got a few people off the fence that were thinking of pulling the trigger sometime back.
Is it equally good in Palm Beach, Connecticut, and you know, everywhere you do business? I mean, it's just raging everywhere, because most of us are agents on this call. And so we're interested, you know, how's the market? And up there in the stratosphere of ultra high net worth and very high net worth, you know, how's the market for you in that category?
So the market's great. The hardest thing right now is in Palm Beach, and you know, I'm an ad guy, right? So I'm not going to try and speak to realtors about your business and try and tell you that I know more, but I certainly pay attention to all the market factors. And I can tell you that inventory is probably at a 20-year low in Palm Beach. So it means that everything's moving very, very quickly. Everything's getting snapped up. Jupiter, somewhat similar. We are seeing some movement toward Wellington, where people are looking for equestrian properties and maybe a little bit more land, and looking to spread out. And in here, we're seeing movement throughout Greenwich, throughout Darien, throughout Westport, Fairfield, you name it. And then we're starting to get people who are going kind of above the line, if you will, and going into Litchfield County and going into Hudson Valley and sort of northern Westchester.
So talk to me. One last question before we get into your slides, and I let Roberto get a word in edgewise. Recently, Dinyar wandered into the woods with his client, with me, to look at a $1 million piece of land in New Canaan. And I thought, man, times must be tough when Dinyar is slumming and looking at a $1 million piece of land. How low do you go? It's not just the enormous stuff, right? You guys will build regular houses for regular people?
Well, there's economies of scale, and there's certain things that, you know, when you look at the way we build and the way we charge for our work, it probably doesn't make sense for everyone. So there is some limitations, but there's sort of a misnomer that we're only doing, you know, these very large estate like homes, but those are sort of the halo products. In the same way that if you're a car company, you're going to lead with your fastest car, your most glamorous car, or things like that. So we will work on houses anywhere from 3,000 to 30,000 square feet, and prices range from 3 million all in to, you know, upwards of 50. So, you know, it's a pretty wide gamut.
All right. All right.
Let me ask you something. You had talked about, like, you guys are at capacity. And we spoke to you recently and you were talking about people who really are demanding things and they want them now and they want the turnaround time to be now. Mm-hmm. If you're at a point where you're kind of almost not accepting more business because it has to have a certain life cycle before you can put something else on top and bring it in. Mm-hmm. Is it only natural that you would, first of all, gravitate to the larger projects because that's where it's like, do I sell, you know, $300,000 apartments or do I try to sell $5 million apartments? You know, where should I focus? You know, obviously you want a little bit of this and a little bit of that because you're not always selling $5 million apartments. But, and also the other question is, you say you're an ad guy. So I would think that part of your job is generating business. But if you're at capacity, what exactly is your job?
So I'll try and answer that in a couple of segments. Let me unpack that in various pieces. So, first off, I think what I would say is that sometimes when you get to this point, it gives you the luxury of choosing which projects are going to be most interesting and which clients are going to be the best to work with. And when I say we're at capacity, that doesn't mean that we're going to turn people away. But what we'll probably do in some instances is say, you might have to wait 3 months before we can begin work on your project. And here's why, and, you know, try and lay out what that looks like. So that's a good position to be in, but it's a difficult position to be in with people who are reasonably demanding, you know, to start with.
Exactly.
Second part, as sort of the, you know, ad guy, and I put that in quotes, you know, it's like I'm in a recovery program. I'm no longer on Madison Avenue. So, you know, the thing is for what we're doing, you always need to have a full pipeline. You always need to be looking at where's your next job going to be coming from and how can you keep that as packed as possible. So we keep a running list of prospective buyers and we're always talking to people. We had quite a meeting yesterday on someone's yacht, actually looking to build. And we had a really interesting conversation about their needs and wants and what they like. And that might be a very interesting client to work with. So, you know, we try and keep the pipeline full. So that keeps me gainfully working as much as I can.
Yacht hopping, as it were. Hopping from yacht to yacht, signing deals. I love that. I love that image now. Do you want to take us through a few slides or video and talk to us about, why don't you take us through the slides in case, the technology blows up?
Okay, sure. And so first off, I just want to start with this. As I said, you know, I'm an ad guy. My first initial passion was architecture. I started out as an architecture student at Cornell University. I got into it. And by the time I got to structures, I decided I didn't want to do architecture anymore. It's more interested in business. But I have a passion for the space. I've been, you know, working with Dinyard. Dinyard was a client of mine in another life. And, you know, it's a fascinating thing for me to work with. And today was an interesting opportunity to talk about how, you know, architects, which are generally regarded as, you know, everybody has an image of an architect as, you know, this guy with a big drafting table and, you know, pencil behind the ear and, you know, the whole bit. It has changed and evolved so much. And sort of my take on it is how we're working with luxury oriented clients and then how we use technology to work through certain situations. So with that said, let me kick this off. So can everyone see that slide?
Yes.
Okay. So you know, the interesting thing here is that, you know, you talked about it before, we're working with ultra high net worth, very high net worth clients. And by definition, that means that, you know, ultra high net worth is 30 million liquid and above, and very high net worth is about 5 million liquid and above. The thing that's interesting now, and I'm not going to just read these slides, and you know, I joke and say the first 100 slides go by really fast, but you know, I want to talk about this a little bit because it gives you a sense of where we're coming from. The luxury buyer and who we're really dealing with now has evolved so much from what they were like before. And I've worked on a number of different luxury brands. I've worked on, you know, anything from Audemars Piguet to Rolex to, you know, other things like that. And it's kind of interesting to think about how those luxury buyers think. But so what I would start with is by saying that, you know, the buyers that we're dealing with now have just so much higher expectations. They do more research. They're on the web. They're looking at options. They know what things cost. They're really dissecting something. And for our business, it's a long tail process. So, you know, our grandmother research, I don't have the kind of research I did when I worked on like CPG brands, but what that would tell us is that, you know, the decision-making process is anywhere from like 9 to 18 months as they're sort of shopping for an architect at this level of home. And for them, there's kind of a couple of tenets that I think that are important to emphasize. First is that, you know, luxury has to be able to separate them from the rest of the herd, for lack of a better term. They want to know that what they have is completely different from what someone else has. And that counts for everything they buy, but particularly for homes. So the next part is that it's really got to be transformative. You know, it's got to be something that makes things very different for them. It has to be an experience that they can really move through. And then the last is that there needs to be this sort of sense of continued euphoria. So that's sort of the mindset that we have when we're trying to deal with these clients. And that's important to recognize. A lot of you are working with them, so you know what it's like. Hold on, I actually have to move slides differently when I'm looking at it this way. So how are we, you know, trying to keep these luxury buyers, you know, happy and engaged? So we're trying to deliver this very bespoke experience, but we realized that tech was going to be something that solved a lot of issues that we had. And the interesting thing here, and again, it's different than anything I've ever worked on in my career, but in terms of architecture, you know, and you know, Scott, you know this, the product that we're creating is based on the client's vision. So, you know, if it's like buying a, you know, a custom suit, you know, it's, you're choosing fabrics, designs, finishes, buttons, all those things. Clients are doing the same thing here. So we don't really have control over the end product. The product that we create takes anywhere from 18 months to 3 years before it's finally done. And in that process, there's a
gap. Yeah, I want to see some pictures. We're only okay on slide two.
I'm going to get,
I know you got 25 slides. I'm worrying. I'm getting worried here.
All right.
Come on. Pictures.
So the thing is that, you know, we're not able to show clients what we're doing during certain parts of the process. So what we're going to use is technology to help us do that.
Okay.
So this is traditionally what we would do. So the sketch on the left is a rail, a brass stair rail that was hand-drawn. This is a front door actually for a project in the middle that we're working on currently. And then this would be sort of what I'd call the old school, you know, rendering that somebody would have gotten at a certain point in the project to show them what their home would look like. And that, you know, is table stakes. And I think people ultimately just, you know, that's all they're looking for. So like I said, it can take like 3 years for us to get to a point where somebody's walking in the door of their home. We had this whole series of processes that we walk clients through so that we can kind of keep them informed and so on. But what we did is we opted to use technology to move things along. So this is a typical beginning. So you go through your schematic phase. This is a pencil drawing.
There's nothing typical about that picture.
Typical drawing, not a typical home. I will admit this. This is actually being built right now on Lake Avenue in Greenwich. You can not surprisingly see it from the road, so you'd be able to see it as you drive by.
How many square feet is that roughly?
It's 31,000 square feet.
Got it. Yeah.
It's like a country club.
So, go ahead.
It's beautiful, even in black and white, especially in black and white.
Well, thanks. And again, that's something that, you know, we have someone on staff who is incredibly skilled at putting together these types of drawings. But this would normally be the first thing you'd get, you know, as sort of the opening piece. So then what we do is kind of move that to, you know, you go through program and schematic design and then design development and then construction plans. And so, you've got floor plans and so on that you start to flesh out. And then we get to CAD drawings. And largely those were internal. You'd share them with clients occasionally, but they're not the most exciting thing for lay people to look at. It's not particularly wow oriented, but you know, I think that this is something that you know, people were sort of used to seeing. And then now what you can introduce into this is SketchUp. So SketchUp is, we take a CAD drawing and we put it into SketchUp, and that allows us to show dimensionality. So if you wanted to see this front elevation and then look at what it would be like from an aerial view, you can see how things come together, and it allows the architect to get a better sense of proportion and scale and how things are sort of marrying together in the images.
Who is the CAD for and who is the SketchUp for? Is it for the client to visualize, or is it for the people who have to build it?
It's largely an internal thing. Again, SketchUp is more for the architects to see. There was a point where you might show that to a client, but now we've moved well beyond that. This was a very short interim phase for us, but it's really something that allowed us to, again, get a sense of proportion, how things would look and how they would look from different angles, and you'd be able to move things around. I don't have a live demo of it. It would, you know, kind of suck all the data dry here on this call, but that's basically what you'd end up seeing as an architect.
The first basic question of this hour in my mind is, if I'm a client and you're proposing something like this to me, and if it doesn't help me to visualize it, then I don't want to pay for it. It occurs to me, I don't want to go through extra time to go to CAD or SketchUp if it's not important for me to visualize it. So my assumption was that you're doing this to help the client visualize their property from above, from below.
And we are, because this allows that client to see what the house would look like from different angles. So, you know, you could do a quartering away shot and look at it from the front elevation and a side elevation so that the client could understand how it's going to sit and in some relative context. But the hard part is that then they're not visualizing the land. They're not, you know, they have to think about all the different pieces and put that together in their head. So it was less effective to do it that way. And then we kind of moved into this new setup, which has become very useful. And I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. So clients who are spending on average $15 million for a house, you know, they're going to want to have a very good view of what their finished product is going to look like. So that's why we moved into this sort of next phase, which is these photorealistic images. So this is what that house, the initial pencil drawing that I showed, this is what it will look like when it's done. So in here, this was actually an existing garden wall that we kept on the property. And then behind here is a little conservatory that was also on the property that was a very interesting piece, which we kept, and we kind of built around that.
It's nice to know that you guys are into recycling. I like that.
I have a question. How much of the nitty-gritty design, at what level of the nitty-gritty design do you have to get to in order to input this into whatever generates that?
So what we'll do is we'll take completed CAD drawings and we will use these to generate these images.
Okay. And then you have to say, all right, I'd like a darker gray stone roof, slate roof, dark gray slate roof, and I'd like a lighter limestone wall, and that the client will say, I like the color scheme or I don't. And does the builder say, okay, which slate and which limestone do you want me to use to actually make that? I mean, are they both keying off of this saying, I'll take it?
I don't know if it's that, certainly it's not that simple. But, you know, the thing that's interesting is that, you know, it does allow them to see certain things. So, and as I go through some of these pictures, you'll see that these are basically based on geolocations. So we can tell which angle the sun is going to hit the property. We can tell where shadows and light are going to be. We can actually, and I'll point this out later, but we could take an image from a catalog of a piece of furniture and put it in for an interior so that they could see what that would look like in there.
Let me have another question. Let's just say I'm looking at this and I say, you know, not for any reason because it's beautiful the way it is, but let's just say, I say, look, you see that right part of that house, that right kind of buttress or, you know, that little house with the four windows there. I would like that to be broader. I'd like to add a third window and stretch that out. Now, if you were to just do that, does that also interpret to you that it all the automatically just gives you a rejiggers all the dimensions and you just have that automatically?
No, it wouldn't. We'd be back to basically redoing the schematic design and going back to expanding whatever space that is, or adding windows or changing something. And then we're redoing the CAD drawings and then we're doing this. Right. So the process is that, you know, we give the CAD drawings to an offshore team and they put these renderings together based on the CAD drawings. It takes about 5 days. And again, certainly for the high end clients, it's worth it for them to see what things are really going to look like as they go. Sure. Let me show you. I think the next one's the rear elevation. And so this will give you a sense of what it's like to see it from the back out to the road, how the pool is configured, a general sense of the landscaping. And it's a really good way for them to visualize that. Again, the light is kind of moving around as we go. So Roberto, to your point, I wouldn't think that at this stage, we would get that many changes, but you know, if we did, we could reconfigure it and show them what it would look like.
It's amazing.
Yep.
And it's also interesting. You know, I always stress we're not trying to pull the wool over anybody's eyes, but a lot of people look at this and depending on the image, you know, some are more realistic than others. They will see that and assume it's an already built, you know, built environment. So
just it curious, works well. Is this, I'm assuming this is an actual thing that's being designed, right?
Yes.
So
all of these are.
At this stage, did the client have any changes based on looking at these?
Generally not. Sometimes they'll talk about, so for example, you know, pavers or brick or something like that on the ground, they'll look at that. There's a closer image that I can show you that'll give you a sense of detail on that. They might say, hey, that would be better for a little bit darker. But the other part is that there's only so much we can show in terms of like actual detail on this. And a lot of that is sorted out by going through the individual materials that, you know, sit down with the client. And generally what we do, so for example, we would mock up a wall so that the client can actually see the stone in real life. So whether it's brick, whether it's, you know, French limestone, doesn't matter. We will mock up about a 6-foot section of wall so that the client can walk up and see what their home exterior is going to look like before we build, so that there's no mistakes, no misinterpretations, too much risk.
At what point do you and the client get confident in the budget? At the CAD level, at the original floor plan level, you can say, yep, I know this is a 20 versus a $25 million house. And as we refine some of the design decisions, which kind of limestone, which kind of pavers, will get even more exact. Is that how it works?
Sometimes, and sometimes what we're doing is we're talking clients out of spending a lot of money. So for example, French limestone doesn't do particularly well in the frost environment that we have in New England. And sometimes we'll source that stone from a quarry in upstate New York where we know that stone is conditioned to survive, you know, the constant warming, freezing that we experience here. In Florida, it might be a little bit different, but we are going through those selections very carefully. And, you know, you'd be surprised. Sometimes it's on these really big projects that they get into very granular level of detail. Whereas, you know, on somebody who's building a smaller home, they just want a jewel box and they trust us. So, it you know, you have a wide variety of client tastes and interactions.
All right, keep showing. I know you got more eye candy for me.
So, and the other thing we're trying to do is give a sense of you know, a little bit of lifestyle in this. It's not just showing the, you know, one specific detail of the home, but to think about what it would be like to be in your yard, in the backyard, and, you know, look back at your home and have an idea of what this is like. So this is, again, rear elevation. You know, it's nice because you can see some reflections in the windows, you can see the shadowing, and, you know, it gives you a sense of the landscape plan and how that would be put together as well.
Can I just, macro, let's just say I'm the client and I come to you. Is this something that's just going to be part of your package of what you're going to deliver? Or is it something to say, look, we can, in our process, we can provide you with this. To do that will be an additional X, or how does that work?
And I don't know if I'm going to answer, I don't know if I'm going to answer your question the right way.
Like, what sort of expense is it to do, to step up your game to do this? Like, how are you, is this a, I mean, I'm just going to get a sense of costs.
So a lot of times, this may strike you as odd, but the conversations that we have are not so much about cost. It's about program. So we're trying to find out from that client what their needs and wants are, what their lifestyle is like. Do they have kids? Do they have a big family, small family? Do they entertain a lot? What's that going to look like? And then we get into a very particular level of detail. You know, it's sort of funny that people don't think about this with architects, but it's like a marriage. You know, you're in with them for 3 years at least. And we ask a lot of very pointed questions. So we might ask you and say, okay, the gentleman of the house, how many suits does he own? How much clothes do you have? How big is that going to make your closet? And then in that, do you hang your pants by the cuffs, or do you fold them over and put them on a hanger? Like, that makes a difference in the size that we create. So what we do is then we create a room schedule, we put things together, and that will inform a budget. And obviously, you know, it kind of goes from clapboard to brick to stone to cut stone in terms of cost. And, you know, once you get into other finishes, you know, costs can get pretty high. I mean, we had a client with a window package that was in excess of $4 million. So
I'm not so surprised to hear that. I think as every realtor, you know, in the room is saying, yeah, I have to find out pretty early on how important closets are, how important bathrooms are. We're usually selling existing product, but we have to know something about our client's lifestyle. But you, when starting with a blank piece of paper, I guess, and you're trying to answer every need for the person who wants it perfect, and they're building new because they want perfect, you have to ask, I get it. You have to ask a whole nother degree of questions that never occurred to me to ask about the pant cuffs and whether you want, you know, I mean, you know, we talk about when building the typical house out here, the $2 million, $3 million house, we say, would you like a closet package? Would you like the California closets package? But that's about as far as most, you know, most houses go. So I think that's a very good example that you use. You have to get to a whole nother level. Go on, keep going. Sorry to interrupt.
No. I think it's very similar. This is a water feature that's in front of the house. And this is what I was saying, is that you'd get a better sense of the texture and dimension of the brick. On the driveway over here, you'd get a better sense of the way the stone is laid and the way the windows are set into the wall. You'd get a much better sense overall of how the house is going to look up close. And we'll do a series of pictures like that so that people can see that. And it really helps them to visualize that much better. So this is, you know, again, this would be sort of the drive in as you're coming into the home.
Beautiful.
This is interesting because this is one of the ones that I would say looks a little bit more realistic than others. Maybe because it's a little bit smaller, but there's actually a sort of a bridge that would be just above the frame of the picture here, which connects two sections of the house. And there's a courtyard below, and this would give you a sense of what that courtyard would look like. And then there's a long access hallway that goes, you know, behind this window, almost the, you know, about half the length of the house. So it gave that client a really good sense to look and see what that would be like. And then, you know, this is for summer. This is, you know, what everybody's thinking about right now. What would it be like to be sitting in my lounge with a drink in my hand, sitting at my pool? So this is the pool rear elevation and the conservatory on the right. And again, you can see that the sun is in a different position, and we just try and show what that would look like sort of in full sun. I'm going to move on to a different home. This is Palm Beach based, actually technically Jupiter. This is a West Indies style home that we were commissioned for. You know, you get a sense of how it would sit. This is actually on a double lot, and I'll show you what that would look like at the end. But this is one where the client wanted to see a lot of different light scenarios. The challenge with Florida, as you can imagine, is that we have to focus on making, you know, in here in New England, you might have a beautiful piece of land and you can have different parts of the house face out to different views. And in Florida, generally, if you're near the water, we have to think about making sure that, you know, 70%, 80% of the house has ways to see out to the water. That's ultimately what people are paying for. So this will give you a sense of how that house is configured and designed. This would be the rear elevation with the pool. Kind of a three-quarter shot showing some landscaping and again, showing some afternoon light. This is the front courtyard looking through the back of the house. And again, looking in sort of not quite full sun, but a very sunny environment. You know, when we're doing this for Florida in particular, we're trying to make sure that people really understand how it's going to look. And then this would be an mid-evening, you know, 7 o'clock shot, I think. And again, we can kind of program how the sun is going to show into this. But this is where I would say, you know, we can even specify right down to the outdoor furniture that's out here. So if somebody wanted, I don't know, Holly Hunt, you know, out here, we could show that and let that client see exactly what that would look like out on that patio in this context. So those are the changes that we can make and do. And this really, really helps us. Also in Florida, because right now we started up at the start of COVID. So we opened our doors in Palm Beach on March 15th last year. Timing was not particularly perfect for that. And it allowed us to, you know, show people what we're working on in the area without being able to drive them over to a property or do something like that. So this has been really, really beneficial. So I wanted to try and show some video here. I hope this will play. If it gets choppy, please let me know. I'm going to show this one first, only because this is kind of relevant for everybody. This is actually a property that's for sale right now in Darien. And it's listed for, I think, $7.5 million. And you we had designed...
You designed and built it a few years ago, and now it's being resold.
No. So the property is vacant. We were hired by a client to build a house for this property. So the property is vacant. I can switch screens, but you know, if you go to realtor.com, you can see the property and I can do that if you'd like. But right now the home and the existing plan that we had has already been approved. So for the broker is able to see what this would look like. The potential buyer is now able to look at this property and see what it would look like. So do you mind if I show it, John, or
no, go ahead. Should I? Yeah.
So go. Let me know if it's too choppy and then we can maybe try and play it from here. Is it going playing okay?
Yep. Yeah, it's going okay.
These are the same offshore people that are doing this?
Yes.
I love that you add people and cars to the video.
Well, again, it's really important to show a sense of proportion.
Does the clients ever say, no, you have to make me look thinner in this rendering?
And this house is that where?
That's in Darien. So this is not built. I'll show you what the land looks like in about 2 seconds. Well, about 30 seconds. So you have a complete 360 flyover of the property, the home, the design, certainly a sense of how things would sit on the property and how it's sited. And the interesting thing about this is that it's all pre-approved for zoning, because this was a plan that was put together for the client that's now selling the property vacant. I'm going to stop it really quick. And I don't know if you'll be able to see this, but if I can go to it. Oh, actually, I'm going to have to pull it up. I killed realtor.com only because.
You pull it up when you're ready.
Scott, you're there, right?
Yep.
I want to ask you a question. Let's just say someone, you wouldn't necessarily build an equal house in Greenwich that you might build in Darien, but let's just say there were two comparable properties and you have a 7,000 square foot house you're building in Greenwich, and someone says, I love that. I want that on this property in Darien. Although it might be a good or bad decision to do that, is the cost to build the house the same?
It is. I mean, there's very little discount for premium waterfront property in Darien versus premium waterfront property in Greenwich. I mean, this is a spectacular lot and a key piece. But the pricing's basically apples to apples. The cost to build are the same.
Because here in Manhattan, I mean, it's just, if you're renovating something on the Lower East Side and, you're renovating something on Fifth Avenue, just the fact that someone's going to Fifth Avenue, they're just like, well, that's going to cost you a little bit more.
Well, a lot of it actually, I mean, it really carries through with the economics of it. I mean, people say, oh, I get you're charging me the Greenwich premium. And the reality is the workers don't live in Greenwich. The workers live upstate. They live up the road a long way, and they've got to commute. And the difference, if anything, Darien might get a little discount because you save 10 or 15 minutes commuting each way each day. But a lot of the workers are all coming at least an hour away, and it's a long drive to get down there. So that's why there's the premium. Sort of like, again, I'm not sure how many of the workers live in the Lower East Side either. But on Fifth Avenue, you don't have a whole bunch of carpenters and electricians living there. So their commute's a pain in the neck, and you got to pay the guys for the commute.
So can everybody see this, by the way?
Yes.
So that gives you a sense of what this looks like. And then I'm going to get to a little bit of the what's in it for me, for any of the brokers on the call.
Well, I can tell you that what you showed us, if I was looking at this and you showed me what you showed me prior, I'd be like, wow, I can do that there.
Yeah.
That's valuable.
So this is the proposed home. This is the land as it is now. So it really allows someone to visualize, because and this is what we're also trying to do in sort of a co-marketing effort. Clients, as you take them to a bare piece of land and they have a lot of trouble visualizing what could go there. So we had a plan for this existing lot for the client that's selling the land. So we talked to the broker and we said, we can generate images that would show exactly what this looks like. In a way that would really help dimensionalize that for any potential buyer. And they can see exactly what they'd be getting.
So if we have a spectacular piece of land, a $5 million plus piece of land, should we come to you and say, can we work together?
Yeah, so let me Let me show you what that might look like.
So going back to that, if I was selling that piece of like that little peninsula there and I came to you and said, I want you to generate that, how much does that cost to produce that?
Let's put it this way. We're not doing it for every property and we're not doing it for every opportunity. This one's a little bit different because there was already a plan in place. So we were able to look at an existing plan and show what that plan would look like. And again, in sort of a three-dimensional way, the architect's time would be reasonably considerable if we were talking about something that's completely spec. But there are times where we'll do that for a particular, like we had, I'll show you a property. We ended up doing three designs for a property in Jupiter. And I will show you what that looks like. And I'll show you how we co-market that, and how we were able to pull that together. I think it's kind of an interesting story. So let me show you what that is. This goes back to, you know, again, what's in it for me. All right, you can see that. So this, that plot of land that I showed you for the house in Jupiter, it was the West Indies style home. We ended up doing three different designs before that property moved, but we also helped the broker who was working with a couple of people who were kind of on the fence. They couldn't quite see how the house would be developed. This is an example of co-marketing that we did where we did magazine ads with that broker. And we showed the potential design of a home that they happened to like. And we created brochures and we created materials for them to go out and market with. And it, you know, it got us a client. So it's a good way for us to make an investment in a particular property that we think has great potential. This was a double lot in Jupiter and there weren't very many of them at the time. And it faces right out to the intercoastal. It's got two separate beaches. It's a nice piece of land, and it was going for enough that it made sense for us to do a design on it.
Apparently, if nice is not strong enough word, because it says right there in the tagline, if nice is not an option, we can give you perfect. So it sounds it was the perfect double lot in Jupiter. That's really extraordinary. And do you find that when you visualize it, you get hired, that somebody doesn't say, okay, that's cool, I like that kind of house on that kind of land, I think I'll go price it with six or seven different architects? Do you find that they say, I have confidence that you guys can visualize and execute?
No, like in certain examples, and you know, this being one, we were then hired based on our knowledge of the property, our ability to look at the survey and tell you what would fit, the fact that we had several different designs, none of which were ultimately chosen as the final product, but you know, still they felt confident that we could deliver on a variety of different, you know, vernaculars on that particular property. So it worked very well.
It's amazing. It really is. I mean, my experience with buyers in New York, when you go in and play, say, listen, you can remove this wall, and buyers have absolutely zero vision. And that's in a different, I'm talking about an apple and an orange. But looking at this, like I've been in Manhattan so long, I haven't really been house searching. But when I see what you've shown me, it's impressive. And it really paints the picture for me.
Yeah. Hold on, I'm going to stop sharing for one second.
How far are we away from getting to wear goggles and walking through your designs?
Probably a little ways off. VR is still not particularly reliable. It's a difficult thing to reproduce at scale. You know, it's one thing to do if you're Disney. It's a whole different thing to do if you're a small business. And, you know, you have to remember at the end of the day that we're a small business. So,
but it occurs to me, you've already got the data in the CAD drawing, and the CAD drawing can be sent and in 5 days turned around by an offshore team. So why can't the offshore team that is painting textures on the exterior of a space and painting textures on the interior of a space in color, why doesn't that just get put through a processor, a computer, and output as VR? No?
Part of the challenge, so I'll give you a sense. I didn't show any of them today, but we have some with interior elevations. So they take the interior elevations and then they fill the room with furniture and they style it and everything else. That process adds at least another week, if not sometimes more, particularly if the person's interior designer is going to be involved. So, you know, again, if we're going to do like a constellation lighting set and we're going to do all these other things that are sort of in the room, then we have to kind of figure out how that's going to look, and they have to source those images and put that in and make it work. So it's, you probably could do, you know, VR on a very low scale, but it wouldn't look right. And it wouldn't look right for our clients. So, you know, what's technically possible may not be really appropriate for our use. Right. The other thing I'll show you is a sort of a low tech solution. And this is also another way that we help clients visualize things, but we've done this where it starts with a line drawing, then like a schematic drawing and so on. This was actually done through construction. And then if I run a slider on it, it shows what the house will look like, you know, when it's finally done. And that type of thing really helps people figure out, you know, what it's going to look like before we do that.
That's good too.
Wow.
I would think any sort of visual aid like that is extremely helpful. It's like virtually staging an apartment that looks horrible.
Mm-hmm. And it goes back to, again, the demands of these buyers at this point. You know, everybody's tech savvy. Everybody has high expectations when it comes to technology. And, you know, it's allowed us to elevate the firm. It's allowed us to show different things. Sorry if I got a little branding in there for somebody else, John, but but you know, it allows us to do some things that are really pretty unique. And John, one other thing I'd tell you is that at the end, if you want to see a couple of interesting tech installs, I put those on the back of the presentation just to talk about technology in general.
So. I did, and others jump in here. I liked these last three slides. Go ahead. Fire them up. Because we're all imagining, you know, where is tech going? And TV, I think, was one of your slides. And we're all wrestling how to make the TV part of the design without junking up, you know, a really pretty room. There we go.
All right. So this is actually open, but you can see that there's a TV behind the screen. This is an apartment that overlooks St. Patrick's Cathedral. There's a partial view of Central Park. And then you have a view all the way downtown. It's a really beautiful apartment. And what they wanted was to be able to hide the TV, which everybody seems to want these days. And we came up with an interesting way to do it, which is we put a photograph and had it put onto Lucite panels. It was basically like burned onto, like a negative Lucite panels. And this allows the user to just sort of hide away the television very discreetly and kind of seamlessly. So that was a custom build. You know, it's funny because the thing that hides the TV costs more than the TV, but you know, it was a really elegant design and a really nice way to do that. And then another one that we used is sort of a like a window shade feature almost. So this is a TV that's actually hidden behind a canvas painting, and the canvas painting rolls up, and it's a nice way to end this because this guy will throw up his arms with the victory here. But you know, that's just another nice way of doing that. And we did that, in a room off the master bedroom. So it was just a way for them to hide the television. So again, that's just the tip of the iceberg for what clients are looking for. This was actually done a couple of years ago, but it was just kind of a cool thing to throw in here.
So it really speaks to, so this is a good segue. You don't just architect and build, but you're thinking about interior decorating and landscape architecture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, the way the home is sited and the way the home interacts with the rest of the site is critically important. And Dinyar has always been very big on making sure that all of those elements marry up very well. But it doesn't mean that we're not going to work with somebody who has their own interior designer. Just because we have it as part of our you know, vertically integrated services, it doesn't mean that we work with plenty of designers, you know, in Fairfield County and in Palm Beach and Westchester. So, you know, I don't want to scare anybody away. It just means that if somebody wants to do that and they just don't want to deal with the extra step, we're able to do that.
So Scott Hobbs, unmute yourself. I'm sure as a guy who's actually working with these kinds of clients, you probably have some questions or some observations. Go ahead, because, you know, you live this space all the time.
I mean, I think Pete did a great job under that. I mean, it's again, the more that the architect can allow the client to see that the architect understands what the client wants, the better the whole process goes. So the more that they're able to, again, utilize these tools, get it there, make sure the client understands, get to that point where it justifies putting up, we call it the lemonade stand, where you build a corner of the house so that you can see the window and the veneers and all of that sort of stuff. But I mean, putting those up is expensive, and it's much better if you can do most of it during the design process. That's great. And the tools continue to go ahead and evolve in such a way so that you can so that the client really can look and say, that's what I mean. And then it actually really helps the builder too, because if I get a three-dimensional set of Revit drawings, or even just any of the three-dimensional drawings, I understand the house much better myself. And so therefore, and when we talk to the subcontractors, we all get it better. We know where there's elevation changes, where something bumps out, how different stories align to themselves. So all of these tools are really important to the design process and make just a real difference for client enjoyment, efficiency of dollars spent. And, you know, for the architects, I forget, somebody had said, they'd asked whether or not, like, if you have to change a window a little bit, what does that mean? And again, frequently it means that the architect loses their shirt. I mean, it costs so much money to do some small changes and have it carry across all of the drawings to make it work inside and out. So again, the sooner it gets to the right thing, the better. The sooner it gets to a proper understanding, the better.
How often are you seeing this, these types of things? You seeing it more and more, like these renderings and stuff like that?
We see more and more. I mean, it's doing the full blown, such as the flybys and full three-dimensional, you know, a video side is seldom. You do see much more of, and even just getting, like, for contractor side, I don't really necessarily need to get, I'll call it the pretty pictures. But what I do need to get is, again, some sort of a three-dimensional as to what are you really trying to do in this integrated gutter detail? How are you really, when you got this parapet wall coming around, what are you really trying to do on the inside or the outside of it? And if the site's non-flat, I mean, how does everything step down in a way? And again, the sooner I understand it, the more accurate my pricing will be, the more easily able I am to convey those things to the subcontractors, and easier they're able to understand it. And it helps to eliminate mistakes.
It's almost like, if to juvenilize it a little bit, is, you know, if you think about it, it's like a giant game of telephone. So you go from a line drawing, and then you have 30 subs that are walking around the site all trying to interpret those line drawings. It's rife with opportunity for things to go wrong. So I think Scott's absolutely spot on with that.
And this is for people who do this a lot, it's hard. For people who are like, this is their first house they're ever building, I mean, it's invaluable. The tools are just really invaluable.
I can only imagine. Can I ask you something? That house that had the peninsula where there was like the flyover, I noticed that there was like a seawall that was built. Mm-hmm. Is that something that, I can only imagine how many specifications that has to, you know, was that all also determined and done to code and all kinds of things like that?
That's based on plan. So on that particular property, the geotechnical engineers came in and they said that we'd probably need to shore up the seawall and we need to do some other things for site improvement. And that's baked into the cost. And, you know, the site improvement alone is probably, you know, close to $1 million, $1.2 million. So that is one of the things that we wanted to show so that there's no mistake, so that somebody couldn't say, oh, well, you know, I thought I could get this house for X with the land. And then they realize that, you know, they're in for another $1 million for the seawall. No, that would have to be done in order to meet code and FEMA and all, you know, a host of acronyms that I'm not even sure I know all of them anymore. So.
And Scott, if you were building this house, if that came to you to build the house, would you be in charge of that seawall, or is that someone completely different?
There's a whole industry under seawall approval stuff. So, I mean, there's a company called Race, and there's a couple of others who actually, they handle all the approval process is brutal. And you'd start, I mean, the moment you commission the architect, you want to commission them to start the approval process. And hopefully you can do them simultaneously. You may end up having to do it a year or two later on. But and we may handle it. It may get handled by somebody else. It just depends how the deal is structured.
Wow. And like, for example, on this particular property, the advantage is that we did all the work previously. The home just wasn't built. So the plan was paid for. The site surveys were paid for. Everything was done. So somebody can basically step into this and avoid all of those, you know, paperwork problems.
So ballpark, to get it to that point, the savings on getting it to that point, essentially the cost of getting it to that point was about what?
Several hundred thousand dollars.
And the level of surety and unbelievable headaches and a year, you know, probably a year savings. And
sure. I mean, time is money and the whole thing. And on how much, the $15 million house you said?
So the house as shown, would be about 17 and a quarter. So it's almost 9 for the land and about 7 and change for the house. Right around 7 for the house. And then, you know, site improvements are about another million and change.
Based on what Scott was saying with time and certainty and everything, that seems like worth every penny.
If you've got the penny.
Of course. Well, if you're buying a building a $17 million house, you know.
It is something for you to say, Roberto. You know, I mean, as realtors, it is something though to keep a real eye out for, is that, you know, what approvals are in place. And that's not a nominal thing. And knowing how to sell that to your client can make a big difference. To sell it to the buyer can make a big difference for the seller. Because that's it's real money, real aggravation, real everything. It's a very good asset for a property.
I have that example happening right now where I've been selling a double lot and I've been representing it as approved. But the approvals have expired. And now the buyer has said, it's going to take me a little bit longer to go back through the process and get it reapproved for subdivision because you didn't do anything. You didn't take any action after you got it subdivided last time around. So yeah, it's going to cost somebody some time and some money. Stay tuned and I'll let you know how that ends. Listen, it's 5:01. I wanted to thank everybody and I wanted to give you a preview of next week. So thank you, Peter. Awesome job. I love the eye candy. I really like getting an understanding of how you basically get going on $10 million worth of construction and get somebody to trust what it is they're going to get at the end. I think you did an amazing job.
Amazing. Really appreciate it. That was great.
Thank you, Scott, for your contributions, you know, from a guy who actually has to build such houses and who appreciates these renderings. Thank you.
I'll be Pete's straight man anytime.
Okay. next week, I want to say that Roberto keeps hearing about this place called Connecticut. And he says, I don't really understand it. You talk about your Greenwich and your Westport. What's the difference? You talk about your New Canaan, your Darien. What's the difference? Stamford, Norwalk. What's the difference? Riverside, Coscob, Old Greenwich, Rowayton. Why would somebody move to Rowayton? Well, so I decided to go get some experts to answer Roberto's question. I have the head of the Westport office and I got the head of the Darien office, and I'll try and contribute something from New Canaan. And between the three of us, we should be able to give Roberto a tour of Fairfield County and why you would want to move here. And by the time we're done, if I'm right, Roberto is going to sell his place in Southampton and get on the next Metro North train right on out here to Fairfield County. He looks like a Westport man. Don't you think, Scott? When I size up Roberto, he looks like a Westport man. He goes.
I'll be the judge. I'll be the judge of that.
Yeah, yeah. A guy who's willing to go a little bit further out on that train to get a little bit of beach and a little bit of value, right? But good school systems, yep. You definitely strike me as a Westport kind of guy.
But he's wearing an AP, so Greenwich would work as well.
Greenwich, yeah. Well, I don't know if Roberto makes that kind of money. So maybe he has to keep going on that train
and
it's Westport.
No.
All right. So next week, more deals. Next week, we're going to find out where is Roberto moving and who can convince him the most. So tune in next week. I'm looking forward to it. I know Roberto is looking forward to it.
I am.
All right. Thanks. And yeah, guys, maybe Pete and Scott can sell Roberto something brand new in Greenwich instead. Huh? How about that? All right.
Game on.
Thanks, everybody.
Okay, healthy.
So long, Skipper.